Hey everyone, this is Tyler from Bible Project, letting you know that we just released the fourth episode in our Sermon on the Mount series on YouTube. This episode explores how Jesus unpacked three commands in the Torah about murder, adultery, and divorce to reveal some deep truths about what drives human behavior. You can find episode 4 out now on our YouTube channel. Thanks for being a part of this with us.
Hey, this is John at the Bible Project. Today on the podcast, we continue a series on the theme of seventh-day rest. God created the cosmos in 6 days, and on the seventh day he stopped, and he settled in to his creation to rest and rule with his human partners in a day that has no end. The seventh-day rest is what we all long for, and it's what God promises to recreate. And to start this recreation project, he chooses one family, the family of Abraham, and he wants to give them the rest that was lost and let them bring that rest to the whole world. So today, on this episode, we're going to look at Israel's sacred days, their feasts and festivals, and surprise, there's seven of them.
What we're going to see is that Israel's ritual calendar on a yearly basis, and then on a 7-year cycle, and then on a 7 times 7 year cycle. These are all ways that Israel is to reenact and symbolize the same basic storyline.
That is the story of God's desire to partner with humans to bring creation to a state of rest. Thanks for joining us. Here we go. We're talking about the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Or are we talking about the Sabbath?
Yeah. The Sabbath is one of the things we're talking about. One of the ways.
It's the way we got into the conversation.
That the ideal of the seventh day is talked about in the Bible. But there are many other stories and themes and whatever time periods of seven that point to the same idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The seventh day, the day of completeness.
Day of completeness, when creation is filled with God's presence and power. When creation responds by generating abundance and humanity can rest and rule in God's presence and trust that everything's going to be okay.
It's the Genesis 1 and 2 ideal
that
was never fully realized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lost.
There was a taste of it.
Yes, a lost opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And this blessing of the seventh day was then offered to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
Who then...
In a seven-line poem.
In a seven-line poem.
Yep.
And he, Abraham's family, ends up slaves in Egypt.
Yes. Yeah.
Not seventh-day rest.
No. No.
Slavery and oppression.
That's right.
And death and
death.
Disorder. Back to darkness and disorder.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. In this case, it's the powers, the gods of Egypt and Pharaoh together... bringing death and darkness onto the family of Abraham. And so just like in Genesis 1, God brought life and order.
Out of darkness.
Out of the dead
disorder.
Darkness in 10 words, 10 acts of speaking. So in the Exodus, God speaks 10 acts of judgment onto Egypt and Pharaoh and its gods.
And he brings them out of darkness.
Yes. And the 10th all begins at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if the 10 words uncreate or decreate Egypt back to the dark night of death. And then God provides light. He starts redoing Genesis 1, but just for the family of Israel.
Yeah. And so then Israel now is in the wilderness. And
Well, it brings them, gives them light and takes them through the waters.
That's true, yeah.
To the dry land.
Yeah, we're supposed to be seeing all this Genesis 1 replay.
And you're like, oh, this family is on the way to a new Sabbath rest and a new Eden.
A new seventh day.
Correct.
And God says, I've got a land for you.
Yeah.
And it's going to be abundant.
That's right.
And so we're like, yes, seventh day rest.
Yeah.
We're going to get back.
Yeah.
Abraham's family is going to be there. He's going to show the world what it's like to rest and reign with God.
Yep. Yep.
And to get there, they have to go through the wilderness.
Yes.
And on the way, they're provided with manna.
Bread from heaven.
Bread from heaven.
Bread from the skies.
Sky bread.
Sky.
Desert flakes.
Yep.
Remind me how that how that connected to Sabbath.
They're journeying.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. They're grumbling because, like, we don't have any meat or bread.
Yeah.
And you brought us out here to kill us in the wilderness, the realm of death.
And God instructs them to take this abundant sky bread and pick it up every day.
Every,
day one, day two, day three, day four, day five,
day
six.
In the morning it appears.
In the morning it appears.
Yep.
And on day six, to take twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
And so that on day seven, they don't have to work.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have to, they can just rely on the overabundance that they have.
Yeah, the seventh day becomes a day where they imitate God's rest, but that imitation is itself a test of loyalty and trust.
Right.
Where they trust that God has packed creation with enough abundance for them that they can just rest and enjoy it, even while they're in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a band of, like, escaped immigrant slaves, you know.
Yeah.
Just, like, chill out in your tents for a day instead of getting another 10 miles, right?
Oh, they're not even supposed to march. They're not even supposed to be journeying.
Oh, that's a good point. The point is not gather. It doesn't say don't travel. But yeah, don't gather food.
But they're not gathering food.
They're not gathering food.
And this is before there's any sort of Sabbath laws.
Correct. Yeah,
so
that's correct.
This pattern is already present.
Yeah, that's
resting
right.
Resting on the seventh day as as a way to imitate what God did.
Mm-hmm.
But they call it a test. Moses calls it a test.
God calls it
or
a
God
test.
Or God calls it a test.
Yep. Because they've actually already had two collusions before this story where they're grumbling. Yep, in Exodus 15, 3 days after the Exodus event, the parting of the seas, 3 days afterwards, they didn't find any water. And then they did find some and it was bitter. And so they grumbled against Moses. What are we supposed to drink? So already they're, you know, little 3 days.
Yeah. Well, you can get thirsty in 3 days.
Well, you do. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But the point is we're, as readers, we're supposed to view this as kind of like, oh, this doesn't bode well. These people just saw the 10 plagues and the waters parted, and now they think God's brought them out here to kill them?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
To dehydrate them to death.
Yeah.
So can you trust that there will be enough?
Correct.
And that you can rest?
Yeah.
And trust God's provision.
The seventh day is a day to trust in God's abundant provision, even when my circumstances tell the opposite story.
Yeah. Okay, and then it gets really fascinating because Moses is called up Mount Sinai.
Yes.
And he goes up there, and he's up there for...
Yeah. Well, he goes up. He's told to go up, and he waits 6 days.
Yeah.
And then on the seventh day,
God comes and rests.
The glory cloud rests.
And Moses sees something.
He sees up into the heavenly throne room.
Yeah. He sees what it's like for God's presence and reign to be in it.
Yeah.
And God gives him instructions.
Yeah. A pattern.
He calls it a pattern.
He's shown a pattern based on what he has seen
and,
up in the heavens.
And what that is blueprints for the tabernacle. And so Moses comes down with, and the Ten Commandments. That's the same time, right?
No, he's already
got the Ten Commandments.
Come down with those in chapter 24.
This is a separate journey.
Correct. And then they had this covenant ceremony, and they said, yes, we're going to do all this.
Yeah.
And golden then God
calf.
Says, after they get married, basically that's the marriage ceremony of the covenant, after God and Israel get married, then again, God says, come up here. I want to move in. We just got married. I'm going to move in with my people.
Okay, so this is two trips up the mountain.
There's actually seven.
There's seven trips up the mountain?
Between Exodus 19 and Exodus 24, Moses goes up and down the mountain seven times. Seven times.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, this is but on the second, he gets the blueprints. Or is it the second?
On the seventh, he gets the blueprints.
Oh, so we're skipping a lot of territory.
Oh, yeah. I'm not pointing out all the sevens as we go. I'm just... It would be too much.
Yeah.
It's like the Matrix.
He's been up and down seven times at this point?
If you count it.
Really?
Yeah. It's actually fairly complicated, but
it's
a thing going on.
That's
crazy. He gets a lot of exercise. This guy was fit. Moses was fit.
He's got some quads.
Yeah, that's right.
So he gets the pattern.
Yeah.
Comes down.
Yeah.
And the pattern is delivered.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, here's how you're going to build the tabernacle.
Yep.
And it's in a series of seven words.
Seven speeches of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Is the instructions. Mm-hmm. And the last one isn't about how to build the tabernacle. It's about resting on the Sabbath.
Yeah, that's right.
Then what happens right after that?
Then the golden calf story. So even think how it's following the arc of Genesis 1 through 3.
Yeah.
Where you get the blueprints of heaven on earth in a series of seven speeches. The seventh one is about resting on the seventh day to imitate God. Mm-hmm. That's the seventh thing Moses hears. Then the camera zooms down to the, or pans down to the camp where the people are. And
they're worshiping another God.
Yeah. And they say, where's this Moses? And make gods for us. And so Aaron sees. And then he takes
all the
gold,
Genesis 3,
and he makes a golden calf. Yeah.
All the Genesis 3 vocabulary.
Yep.
It's their taking of the tree of knowledge, good and evil moment.
Correct. That's right.
And then they build the tabernacle according to the blueprints.
Well, then the covenant's almost broken, but then Moses intercedes.
Intercedes, yeah.
God forgives the people and says that he'll forgive them and go with them.
Yeah.
Then Moses starts the building project.
Yeah.
Yep.
Again, seven times God said to, or seven times it repeats.
Yeah, it's, you get this long narrative that repeats verbatim the blueprints, but just with verbs now of, and they built the ark this way, and they built this. Or actually, and Bezalel, the artist and his crew.
The designer.
Then we get to Exodus 39 and 40. There's this paragraph where Moses assembles everything. And the paragraph is broken into seven beats. And every beat ends with, and Moses did just as the Lord commanded him. So he obeys seven times over the word of the Lord. Yeah. So, and then on the, after the seventh act of obedience, the glory cloud shows up and Moses finished the work after the seventh act of obedience. This is what it says, Exodus 40, verse 33. And Moses finished the work, just like Genesis 2, and God completed his work.
Oh.
And then at the right in the slot, parallel to Genesis 2, where God rested, here in Exodus, the cloud covers over the tent, and the glory of the Lord appears over it in the pillar of fire and cloud.
So here it is. It's
here
God's...
It is.
Seventh day.
We're back to it.
Rest.
Yep.
It's come.
Yep. Yeah. But now dwelling in a symbolic micro Eden in the middle of his people.
Which is the tent.
Which is the tabernacle. Yep.
But there's a wrinkle.
Wrinkle. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Next to the last line of Exodus. And the cloud covered the tent of meeting and the glory of Yahweh filled the tabernacle. Hooray. But Moses was not able to go into the tent of meeting. It's a tent for meeting with God.
Yeah.
And just right there is stating it as a paradox.
Yeah. Well, and this is representing the Eden ideal.
Correct.
And
yes.
So, of course, you would go in.
Right.
God That's placed the humans
whole
point. There.
Yeah. Now, it's all, right now, it's going to be only Moses, and then later, after he gets ordained, Aaron to go in. So, that already is kind of a bummer. Like, only now a representative can go in. It's a diminishment of the Eden ideal. It's awesome.
The Eden ideal is all humanity would live there.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be born there.
Yeah, yeah. Humanity.
Yeah.
Humanity and life.
Yeah.
Adam and Eve.
That's where they live.
Now it's just Moshe and Aaron, two brothers. So it says Moses is not able to go into the tent because the cloud and the glory of Yahweh were dwelling over it. And you're like, but that's exactly
the point. Yeah. I want to go in there because
it's there.
He's dwelling there.
So
God's presence is created a problem.
God's presence has created a problem for rebellious people who think that God is out to kill them and who make idolatrous golden calves.
It's the same kind of motif then of like the cherubim guarding Eden. Like they can't get back in. It's just the sense of I'm outside, I can't get in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for the Eden ideal to be realized, God's people have to be transformed, which is what the book of Leviticus is all about. That's the transition into the book of Leviticus.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do for this conversation is focus in on a couple more calendar seven themes in Leviticus. that are hovering around the same ideas. Okay. But what we're going to see is that Israel's ritual calendar on a yearly basis, and then on a 7-year cycle, and then on a 7 times 7 year cycle. These are all ways that Israel is to reenact and symbolize the same basic storyline. They're to build it into every part of their lives. So where the drama of Leviticus is amazing, I highly recommend a book by Hebrew Bible scholar Michael Morales. We'll put it in the show notes, called Who Shall Ascend the Mountain of the Lord? A Biblical Theology of Leviticus. Dude, it's so awesome.
Sounds riveting.
It actually is, yeah. If you like the Bible. So that works through a lot of stuff in Leviticus that we won't talk about.
Okay.
But what I want to talk about is the 7th year release of slaves and of debts in ancient Israel.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound riveting?
So we already know about the 7-day just weekly cycle.
Correct.
And it's one of the Ten Commandments.
Correct.
There's two different times the Ten Commandments are talked about. And one, it says, because God created the earth this way, rest on the 7th day. But also in the other time it's talked about, it says, because you were slaves and you were liberated. And because of that, rest.
That's right.
And trust God and let your slaves rest.
Yeah, you got it. So, yeah, watch how this all folds together in the 7th year command. So the first time this 7-year release gets expressed is actually back at Mount Sinai during the covenant-making ceremony, where you remember there were the Ten Commandments and then 42 more after that. And those are the terms of the marriage covenant between God and
42,
Israel.
6 times 7.
That's right. So one of the commands...
One of the 42.
One of the 42 is this law right here in Exodus 23, verse 9. You shall not oppress the immigrant, since you yourselves know the life of the immigrant. The Hebrew word is nefesh. You know the being, what it means to be an immigrant, for you were immigrants in the land of Egypt. 6 years you shall sow your land, sow seed in your land, and gather in its yield. So 6 agricultural cycles.
Okay.
But in the 7th year, release the land. Leave it alone.
Release the land.
Yes, release it.
Yeah, like the land is under bondage.
Yeah.
Under slavery.
It is under, you're working. Remember, the word for work and labor is the same Hebrew word for slave. So when you're working the ground, you're making it serve you.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Ground's like, I just want to chill out and make garden flowers or meadow flowers.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, and humans like, are like, no, you're going to make like cucumbers. Right? That's subduing the land.
Nope, you're a pumpkin patch.
You make it serve your will.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So once every 7 years, on that 7th year, set the land free.
Yeah.
Look, and think, this follows just after the command of don't oppress the immigrant.
Right.
Because you were immigrants in Egypt. You know what it's like to be slaves. Uh-huh. That's the whole point. And then the next law is...
Don't oppress the land.
You know what it's like to be a slave. You know what it's like to be a freed slave. So every 7th year, free the land from being a slave to you.
Interesting.
Here's the reason. So that the needy of your people may eat, and whatever they leave, the beast of the field can eat. You're to do
because
the same.
Because it's still going to grow stuff, even if you haven't thrown seeds in.
That's right. Yep. That's right. So notice, for man and beast to eat. So you've got these farm fields and... The poor can come earn a living off of it, can come provide for themselves, but also the animals.
Is this the 7th, like, would it have been everyone's on the same cycle, or is it the 7th year of any given plot of land?
Okay, yes, this is totally, welcome to the rabbit hole.
Okay.
So one is, if this is everybody doing it on the same time, then that could pose some problems.
Would pose some problems.
Yep. So it could be that it's understood that when you acquire, you know, so this is kind of like, I think this is like fallow, letting the land lie fallow.
Yeah, right.
And so different fields will be on different time cycles and so on. So all the way back.
That's a farming thing.
Correct.
To let your land chill.
Correct. That's right. And so all the way back to the period of Jesus, Jewish rabbis have been debating these things.
I see.
Whether this is like a more of a utopian vision. Yeah. Everyone at the same seventh year.
Yeah.
Or different farmers. And it doesn't clarify.
Right.
Here. But the point is, you can see the Eden ideal coming out here. Every seventh year.
Let the land just produce on its own.
You let the land produce and just trust that, right?
Wow.
It will produce for you by God's generosity and wisdom. In fact, there'll be enough for the poor and for the wild animals.
Wow.
It's the garden.
It is the garden.
It's the garden.
Now, if you really cared about the poor and the wild animals, why wouldn't you just plant some seed in there? Because then you'll have more.
That's a great point. Here, we're looking at the paragraph. So.
Well, I mean, there's something about...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's something about the Eden ideal, which is... You don't work for it, and it'll still be abundant.
Mm-hmm. Let's finish the paragraph.
Okay.
Sorry, we're only halfway through it.
All right.
So we had, the first statement was, don't oppress immigrants, because you used to be enslaved as an immigrant.
Okay.
6 years, sow seed, seventh year, release the land.
Okay.
So that the needy can eat and the wild animals.
Okay.
6 days you are to do your work, but on the seventh day you shall Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
So that your ox and your donkey may nuach. There's our two words there,
yeah.
Shabbat
and nuach.
And so that as you cease and rest on the seventh day, the son of your female slave as well as the immigrants among you may refresh themselves.
Mm.
And the word refresh is the verb nafash that comes from the noun nefesh, to be alive, to have life. So this whole, it's actually a beautiful little symmetry, this paragraph here. But you can see how the 6 years of sowing is parallel to the 6 days of working.
Yeah.
The seventh year freeing the land is parallel to seventh day. You ceasing and resting, but also so that you're the poor, the immigrant, and the slave may also rest along with you. So the whole package deal, Sabbath, rest, is a it's like a little Eden reset.
Mm-hmm.
Every 7 days and every 7 years.
Eden resets.
It's like resetting the land to the life of Eden for a day, every 7 days, and then
for a Because in the life of Eden, you're not working, you're letting the land just provide for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great point. You're not supposed to sow and gather. Oh, and this is also picking up the manna pattern as well.
Right. Don't pick up the manna.
6 days you go out and gather on the seventh day.
And this goes
don't.
Back to what we talked about, because when humans are placed in the garden, they're told to work and serve.
To work it and to keep the garden. Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
But there is this idea, here it's like very clearly like don't
sow.
Well, it doesn't say don't work,
gather.
It just doesn't sow and gather.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's it. You release the land by not sowing and not gathering. But that's the majority of the work.
That is a majority of the work. There's something about Eden in which you don't have to really work for it. It just kind of happens.
It responds, I guess, the land responds happily. The land isn't your slave in Eden.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
I mean, to me, that's what's fascinating is that the land is freed from serving you.
Oh, but in its freedom... It does have an abundance
for you.
It's a different relationship with the land.
This is a great example of how later cycles of a design pattern give you new insight to go back to the beginning.
And to think about
the first instance of the pattern.
Yeah.
This happens a lot. It's like a backwards kind of commentary or reflection.
Right.
So this is interesting. Yeah. It's not bad that God's given us the land to serve our needs.
Yeah.
But the land is also not ours. It doesn't belong to me. It's not my property. It's on loan. And so I free it. I set it free every seven
years. There's this ideal where the land is free, but it still provides for you.
Mm.
And not just for you, but for the poor.
Yes.
And for the animals.
Yeah.
Everyone's being provided
for.
That's
right. And in fact, that's analogous to the Sabbath rest, where every 7 days you let... Your animals and
your household.
If you're in Israel, and if you own slaves as nation Israelite, them. You let them rest too.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if they're not your property for a day either.
Right. Is there something similar there too, which is like in your rest, there still will be enough and abundance?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll all be provided for. Yeah. I mean, people have noticed, both in Exodus, we'll look at another one, this seventh year principle is a really radical equalizer in the life of ancient Israel, which was a fairly, it was a patriarchal, traditional, hierarchical society. But the seventh day had a way of putting everybody on the same footing, including the animals and including the land.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone gets to rest.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, totally. Okay, every 7 years gets repeated and carried forward in Deuteronomy. And then we're going to come back to Leviticus, trust me. Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 1. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release. It's just a principle.
Okay.
Every 7 year is a year of release.
Okay.
Okay, what does that involve? Well, it involves two things. One is, this is the manner of the release. Every lender shall release what he's loaned to his neighbor. He shall not take it back from his neighbor or his brother, because it's Yahweh's release being proclaimed. So
if you owe someone money,
it's not forgiven. Yours anymore. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So a debt release from debt obligations.
Don't sign a 30-year loan in Israel. Or no, sign 30-year loans. Don't offer them.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So let's go down to verse 12. It's a release from debt.
That's really radical.
Oh, dude, there were some analogies to this in the ancient Near East.
Huh.
When a king would come to be inaugurated, he, like in Babylon, it's both in Babylon and I believe in Hittite culture, whatever. I've read this in like background dictionaries and kind of thing. It was the king's prerogative in his opening year to proclaim a release to free slaves or to cancel debts.
Okay.
So what's radical is not that such a thing should happen.
Okay.
It's what's happening in ancient Israel is being freed from human control.
It's not up to just one king when it happens or if it happens.
It's not a political tool. Like, I mean, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, why you would do it.
Yeah. You want to make everyone like you.
Yeah.
You
want a long reign.
Yeah, you want a long reign. You haven't had to break anybody's kneecaps yet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you get 20 years into a reign and you've had to kill some competitors and make some hard decisions that made some enemies.
Yeah.
But you can always say, remember what I did for you all
right.
when I became king, right? I canceled the debts. And so here it's completely detached and it's brought into this seventh day recall to Eden cycle.
Right.
So it's detached from human manipulation. Hmm. So it's every 7 years the debts are released. And then go down to verse 12. Now, if your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then the maximum he can serve is 6 years.
Hmm.
And in the seventh year, you shall send him out. That verb send out, it's what, it's the key repeated motif in the Exodus story. Let my people go means
to send out.
Yeah. Let them be sent out. Hmm. Let them go.
Hmm.
And get this. When you set free your slave in the seventh year, don't send him away, him or her, away empty-handed. Hmm. Furnish him liberally from your flock and threshing floor, from your wine vat. Give to him as Yahweh, your God, has blessed you.
Hmm.
You shall remember you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Yahweh your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you to do this day. So every seventh year, both the land gets released.
Yeah.
Now you have these cycles of every seventh year, debts are released. Debts were a common way that people became slaves.
Mm-hmm.
I can't pay the debt. So then
I'll work it off.
I become the property of the person who I owe something until I work it off. And so there's more laws and clarifications, like if you see the seventh year coming, Oh, well, actually, sorry. We'll get to that later. Just the point here is every 7 years, people's property isn't really your property in terms of debts, and people's bodies aren't your property.
So is it kind of saying, I mean, the assumption then is that owning slaves and owning debt obligations, these things are not the Eden ideal.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
The Eden ideal.
Why else do you have to undo them? Yeah, that's right.
And so every 7 years, it's this resetting mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. remember and to kind of get back closer to that Eden ideal so we don't get too far away from it.
Yeah, that's right.
Even though it's not like we're creating Eden on that seventh year, but we're trying to settle into it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, think especially this is ancient Israel was a hill country, mostly rural towns, farming communities, arranged in extended households of 2 to 3 generations. So you can see how in the course of a generation or two, a few people go bankrupt, a few people become debt slaves. In not very long, 1 or 2 families could own a whole town.
Yeah.
Right? The land and the wealth could become centralized. And so people have noticed this, and it's a way of getting Israel, really, this is resetting the ideal of when Israel first entered the land. Every tribe given their own land, mm-hmm. and it's a way of recreating, resetting the clock mm-hmm. back to that. So it is. It's a completely different socioeconomic situation than most modern economies today. So you can't, I don't think you can just drop these immediately into a modern context. I think you have to really understand the principles at work. But it's recovering an ideal. Hmm. Yeah.
In the same way, there's something about the way that we work during the 6 days of work and the way that we treat land that isn't ideal either, that we need a break from.
Mm. And the land needs a break from us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We need a break from ourselves too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. 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 The daily grind inevitably produces non-ideal situations mm-hmm. where a bad year of rain or something, a bad crop, can't pay off my obligations for this year, and all of a sudden, you know, through nobody's fault, I might have to sell some of my children, sell myself, mm-hmm. or somebody wrongs another person, you know, somebody moves your neighbor's boundary marker. You know, they care a lot about the boundary markers in the Old Testament.
Right.
Because that's like...
Yeah. How you know.
Yeah. And well, then your land is how you provide for your family.
Right.
So you steal like a 10 by 10 square from my farming field.
Kind of keep shifting it over.
Yeah, stuff like that. So people steal and all that. Yeah. And so every 7 years, you just reset to the Eden ideal. Life inevitably produces these inequities that need to be reset in the seventh year.
So in the Eden ideal, not only are you not owning slaves, that makes sense. You're not owning debt, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But you're not working and you're not planting anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of seems like, what are we going to do? We're just going to sit around and
read Torah?
Play Monopoly Go? Monopoly deal? You mean? Read the Torah. Yeah, that sounds better.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's a good example of the Torah is giving us...
It's funny that I chose Monopoly.
Yeah.
Because that's all about it's all about acquiring assets and enslaving people.
So, subconscious or something.
So weird.
Yeah. This is a great example of how the Torah isn't the same thing as Israel's ancient constitution. An ancient constitution would require way more detail about how to implement all of this.
Yeah.
So the author of the Torah, beginning with Moses and then the prophetic scribes that follow him, they have arranged certain laws in the larger narrative thematic development of the storyline. So I think in this context, all these 7 year things are pointing us back to the narrative of the Garden of Eden. And we just have to speculate on the actual economic ramifications of what this meant for your average ancient Israelite. We're just not given that information.
Yeah, well, what it meant for the ancient Israelite, but I'm also thinking, what is it pointing to? What kind of Eden reality is it pointing to? Because, and maybe we're just not supposed to try to obsess about that, but
yeah,
you know, it's a new creation. It's not, it's still
a
physical creation. So I imagine it's going to be a lot like what we know.
Sure.
And so I'm just like, okay, is there going to be work to do?
Yeah.
Is there going to be projects? Or are we just going to be like...
playing Monopoly. I hate Monopoly.
Are you playing Monopoly Deal, though? That's pretty fun. It's a card game.
That's
what I meant to say.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, I did. Oh, I like that even worse. Even less. Even less. Here, I appreciate that you're asking that question. It'll come up again as we go further. So back to Leviticus. Once God takes up residence in the tabernacle, Israel is now supposed to orient the whole of their lives around the reality of God's presence there.
Yeah.
The sacrifice laws all come in,
mm-hmm.
Leviticus 1 through 7. It's how you say thank you. It's how you say I'm sorry. It's how you celebrate with your neighbors that God lives among you. Then you get the purity and impurity guidelines and the kosher food laws.
Mm-hmm.
So these are ways of symbolically reinforcing the fact that the creator of life has come into your midst and death and corruption can't be in his midst.
Mm.
And God wants to change us into people who are free of death and corruption. Mm-hmm. That's the purity laws. The last section of Leviticus in the 20s, you get the ritual calendar gets explored.
Mm.
And this is specifically Leviticus chapters 23, 24, 25, and 26.
Okay.
We're going to just do an overview here. And, you know, these aren't thrilling for most people to read, but once you ponder what's going on here, this is electric stuff, man. Mm. This is cool. Leviticus 23. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ready.
Yahweh spoke again to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, Yahweh's appointed times that you shall proclaim as holy meeting times." Convocations, it's a funny word we don't really use. Holy convocations.
Sacred assemblies in NIV.
Oh, okay, that's a little better. Sacred assemblies, yeah. These are my appointed times. Ah, that word appointed times appears on page 1 of Genesis.
Hmm.
Remember?
Oh, the day 4?
Day 4, yes. God says, "I will give the sun, moon, and the stars for signs and for appointed times."
These are the appointed times.
And here's the list of the 7 appointed times in Leviticus 23.
Cool.
Yep. So the first appointed time is the Sabbath. Yep. For 6 days, work may be done. On the 7th day, there's a complete Shabbat. It actually repeats the word Sabbath twice.
A Sabbath?
Yeah. It's Shabbat Shabbaton. Yeah.
That's lost in translation.
Well, what do you got here in NIV?
Sabbath rest.
Oh, a day of Sabbath rest. Well, there you go. Shabbat Shabbaton.
Shabbat Shabbaton.
Yeah, it's a way of...
a stopping Sabbath.
Yep, stopping.
stopping.
Don't do any work. It is a Sabbath to Yahweh is the... it is the Sabbath. Yeah, same in the NIV.
Yep.
So a Sabbath to Yahweh. It's an interesting phrase.
Stopping to Yahweh.
Yeah. It's a, that to is indicating possession or belonging. It's a Sabbath that belongs to Yahweh.
Huh.
This is not your day.
Hmm.
This day doesn't belong to you. It's just like the debts and the slaves and the land.
Hmm.
This day isn't yours to do what you want with.
Hmm.
This is my day. It's going to be a key principle here. But you can see the analogy.
Yep.
Okay. So the verse 4 then says, these are the appointed times. And you're like, wait, I thought we just had the appointed times. Are you with me? This chapter opened by saying,
these are the appointed times.
Then you get the Sabbath.
And then
verse 4 says, these are the appointed times.
Yeah. So something literally happening here.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So the Sabbath, it's a little frame around the Sabbath. Think of the Sabbath as like the most basic Lego block, like maybe the 2x4 piece,
yeah,
or the one
that
by
is
four.
The most basic,
isn't it?
The
or
two
me,
by
is
four?
The 2x2, the 2x2 Lego block.
Oh no, the 2x4 That's
a total,
like,
of eight little pegs.
That's the workhorse Lego block. That's like if you want to build a castle, you're collecting as many of those two by fours as you can.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you got it. That's right. So this whole chapter is going to be about the annual, the once a year appointed times. Mm-hmm. But it begins with the every 7 days because it's like the most basic building block. Mm-hmm. The rest of the list, which is going to be six more annual appointed times, are all going to be riffing off of the meaning of the Sabbath and the number seven. Mm. And so it's going to take the Sabbath building block and then build all kinds of new Lego buildings out of them in different ways.
Cool.
So it might help just to look at the list. There are six appointed times in the rest of the chapter, divided into two groups of three. That sounds familiar. Mm. That sounds like days 1 through 6 of Genesis.
Yeah.
And they're precisely the ones that come in the first 6 months. You get three.
Okay.
And then the one you get in the second 6 months of the year. So in the you're going to start with the first month.
Yep.
And then the second half of the year begins with the seventh month. That's convenient.
Oh, yeah. There's that number again.
There it is. The first one is Passover and unleavened bread.
Mm. And we talked a lot about this.
Yeah, that's right. So Passover begins on the 14th, 2 times 7, on the night of the 14th.
The night of the 14th.
Right?
That's when the day starts.
That's right. And so you're replaying Genesis 1, verse 2. Mm. You begin in the night.
Yeah. And there was evening and there was morning.
Correct. That's right. Then after Passover, from the 15th to the 21st, you observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days.
Okay. So Passover is the meal on the 14th.
Yep.
Evening of the 14th.
Yep.
And then for seven days after that.
That's right.
So it's really an 8-day feast in a way.
Total when you put the two together.
Okay.
Correct.
But they're two separate. No.
Yep.
They're treated as
they're always mentioned together.
Time. Okay.
Passover is the night of the 2 times 7, 14th day of the first month. And then you get a 7-day observance to follow.
Sweet.
Next thing in the list here is simply called the first fruits. And in Leviticus 23, it's actually ambiguous. This begins in...
Before we get to first fruits, the unleavened bread, the feast, you're just eating unleavened bread for 7 days? That's what you're doing?
You can eat other things.
You can eat other things.
But yeah, no yeast in your bread. I have a whole thing of this in the notes and we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of other traditions packed in those 7 days.
Yes, and especially as the holiday developed throughout Israelite and Jewish history. But the main thing is you eat low quality bread.
Eating crackers.
Mm-hmm.
On the first day, hold a sacred assembly to do no regular work.
Yeah.
And for 7 days, present a food offering to the Lord. Okay, so you're doing some offerings.
Mm-hmm.
On the seventh day, hold a sacred assembly and do no work.
That's right.
It's framed by...
Yep.
Sabbath.
Yep. The first day and the seventh day are extra special days.
Yeah.
Yep.
More stopping.
Yeah. More stopping. Yeah. And so because the seventh day, you have to get calendars out to do this. Mm. This is always confusing to me. Because remember, all these sevens are tied to the moon cycle because it's all about the first of the month. And their month is about the moon cycle.
Yeah.
So these days float independently
of a Sabbath
cycle. Of the perpetual 7-day Sabbath cycle, which is not based on the sun or the moon.
So like the Passover meal itself might land on any random day.
It might, yes. But every once in a while, it will land on the Sabbath like it does on Passion Week for Jesus.
Oh.
Which is why...
That's a probably extra special Passover.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. A year when the Passover overlaps with the 7-day Sabbath, it's an extra special Passover.
Yeah.
And that's what the gospel authors highlight.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So then the day after that, there is a sacred assembly and you don't do any work. On that next would have been the Sunday.
Correct. Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we get to the gospels.
Thank you.
The next one begins in verse 9 of Leviticus 23.
Okay, first verse.
Which says, when you enter the land, which I'm going to give you, and you reap the harvest, bring in the sheaf of the first fruits.
Yeah.
And show it to the priest. He's going to do the symbolic things with this. And do this
the day after the Sabbath. Yeah.
Really unclear. Does
which
it mean
day?
Exactly?
Yeah.
It doesn't say
which Sabbath.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess it's whenever the harvest starts.
Whenever the harvest starts, you go into your land, and whenever the harvest comes.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. So that.
So basically, if the harvest starts on like a Wednesday, then yeah. that next Sabbath.
Yeah. Correct.
The day after, you're doing this.
Correct. Yep. That's right. So cool. That's a floating. But the point is after the on the Sabbath. Of whatever the harvest is,
yeah.
you bring in the first fruits.
Yeah.
Next one is Pentecost, which is after Passover and unleavened bread, you count seven Sabbaths.
After Passover and unleavened bread, you count seven. Okay.
Seven Sabbaths.
Okay.
So seven times seven days, seven Sabbaths.
We call those weeks.
We call them the weeks.
7 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Seven Sabbaths.
Yep. So think, you're already going to have a Sabbath. Seven times seven, the 49th day is going to be a Sabbath.
Yeah.
But then on the 50th day,
uh-huh.
you have an extra holy day
hmm.
where you do the same thing you did on the Sabbath, but you just carry it over for an extra day.
You just get a double heaping of Sabbath.
Totally. Yeah, that's right. And you bring in...
Sounds like a weekend.
You bring in now a whole bunch more of your harvest and you offer it to God as a thank you. Thank you. So that's the first half of the year.
Cool.
And it's pretty stacked.
That's called the Festival of Weeks.
Weeks, because the word weeks in Hebrew is seven.
But it's really just a one-day thing.
Well, but it's named after...
The fact that you're counting weeks.
That you're counting seven sevens. The Greek name is Pentecoste, which is the Greek word for 50.
Oh, yeah.
So it's named after the final day.
Got it.
The Hebrew name, weeks, is for the whole duration. All right. So that's the first
this
half
is great.
Of the
year. This is a festival... Crash course.
Totally, yeah.
Loving it.
All right.
Okay, first three, Passover.
Yep.
And then after that, it's a week of eating crackers. Unleavened bread. Week of unleavened bread.
Yep.
Then it's the harvest one.
Yep.
So harvest comes, whenever the harvest mm-hmm. happens, that next Sabbath.
Yep.
The day after that.
Yep.
And that one's called the
first fruits. Yep.
And then you count 50 days. After the Passover.
Mm-hmm. Seven times seven.
Seven times seven
yep.
weeks.
Yep.
And then you have the yep. day of weeks.
The day of weeks for Pentecost.
Pentecost.
Yeah. Rebring.
Okay. Yep. Those are the first, those happen all in the first half of the year.
Correct. Cool. So now we're up to four in terms of our list of, of Leviticus 23. Last three now happen in the second half of the year, and they all happen in the seventh month.
They're all packed into the seventh month.
In Jewish tradition today, they're called the days of awe and wonder, because they're all packed into about 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
So there's a lot of days off. Kind of the way that in the Western religious calendar that Christmas and New Year's.
You get a lot of time off.
Create this big block.
Yeah.
So this is that big block in the Jewish calendar. It's usually in October.
Man, I'd rather have a bunch of time off in the fall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's usually like late October, November, early November.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And one of these, you like hang out in a tent, right? That's the next one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yep. Yep. Yeah. So the first thing you do is on the first day of the seventh month, you blow trumpets.
Oh, okay.
To mark the... beginning of the seventh month.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's an important month.
Yep. This is what's now called Rosh Hashanah, which is the Hebrew phrase that means the head of the year.
The head of the year.
Oh, this is fascinating. The way the language for the year works, it seems like ancient Israelites conceived of their year as essentially, you know how we have like a financial year?
Yeah, fiscal
then
year.
Then we have, there's like... Yeah, and then think daylight savings is some other weird way of accounting for a year.
Okay.
It is, based on the old agricultural calendar,
oh, right, uh-huh.
when we set our clocks and do that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Then we have
our calendar year. Yeah. Solar year.
We have many overlapping different calendars in our minds.
Sure.
And so in the same way, there's different...
School year.
Overlapping calendar. School year. Yeah, that's good. Yep. Okay. So in a way, there's different overlapping calendars in the Hebrew Bible.
Okay.
Months are called different names based on different calendars. Mm. It's very confusing. This is an additional wrinkle that the language of the seventh month is talked about as if it's the first day of the new year.
Mm. Okay.
It says this every 6 months, you're conceiving of the next 6 months as the next year. If you think of your year in 6 month blocks, then the seventh month is like a new beginning within the year.
Okay.
Anyway, so Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, can...
It's a new year's of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's also the seventh month.
They conceived of their year in
understand
these...
that it's also not a new year.
And actually, think about this. In pre-calendar cultures where like when you lived in blocks of weeks in your mind, like think the Sabbath is many people's way of accounting for time.
Yeah. It's how many Sabbaths ago did this happen?
Yeah. How many sundowns ago was the Sabbath? Three. Like these days were the anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rhythms of the harvest
would
be another way to anchor time.
Yeah.
And so the first month and the seventh month are two big anchors.
Okay.
And then when you're in those, you're just in those other cycles, mostly in thinking about Sabbath cycles. So same year. Anyway, so Rosh Hashanah is on the seventh month.
Rosh Hashanah.
That later became associated with the story of the giving of the Torah on analogy with the sound that the people heard when God's glory showed up on Mount Sinai.
Mm-hmm.
It says that they saw the sounds and heard them when the cloud showed up. And so today it's associated with celebrating the giving of the Torah.
Rosh Hashanah is.
Rosh Hashanah, yeah.
Okay. And that's the first day of the seventh
month. That's right. The 10th day of the seventh month is the Day of Atonement.
Mm.
So that's the day with the purification offerings, the two goats. So if you think of the Sabbath as a weekly reset to the Eden ideal, the Day of Atonement happening on the 10th day, remember 10 is a key number in these symbols too.
10 words.
The 10 words. 10th day of the seventh month, it's the day when Israel's sins are all focused in on one goat that's exiled from the camp. It's as if we go back to being in a pristine, sinless state before God, at least for a few minutes.
Totally. It's clear in your browser history.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So there it is. It's the Day of Atonement. Then on the 15th day of the seventh month begins a 7-day Feast of Tabernacles. And here you relive the wilderness wanderings for seven days.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember how unleavened bread lasted 7 days too?
Yeah.
And on the unleavened bread, the first day and the seventh day were the special meetings.
Yeah. And they were like an extra Sabbath almost.
Correct. Yep.
Don't do
Tabernacles,
any work.
Every one of those 7 days.
Yeah. Don't do any work.
This is the culmination of the year. It's the seventh, right?
Yeah.
It's the seventh in the list of tabernacles.
Yeah.
And so in...
This one sounds the most fun to me out of all of them.
Tell me why.
Well, you're not working for 7 days. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then you're all hanging... You're like... You're camping out and... In front of your house.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Sounds great.
It's totally awesome. I agree. So every day is like a Sabbath. Every day, extra special offerings are being made.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book of Numbers chapters 28 and 29, just focus in on the special offerings for these 7 days.
Mm.
And, you know, you're offering 77 bowls and in the tabernacle at the center. It's all just, you know.
Yeah.
And, going back to live in a tent.
Yeah.
You have the sacred tent in the middle.
Right.
That's a little micro Eden.
Mm-hmm.
In the desert, they were given the bread of Eden to eat and an extra bit for every seventh day.
Yeah.
So the journey in the wilderness is the exact opposite of the garden.
Right.
But the manna and then the tent in the wilderness.
The tabernacle?
The tabernacle are these symbols that even in the wilderness, God recreated Eden for them in the wilderness.
Yeah, Eden can be found.
Eden can be found. Like the Psalm 107 will say, he makes pools of water for the thirsty in the wilderness, for our ancestors. That's, he created Eden in the wilderness. Mm. That's how they made it for 40 years. Mm. So for 7 days a year, we party like we're in Eden.
Yeah.
In our own little sacred tent in our backyard. Mm. Yeah. That's what the whole thing's about.
It's cool.
It's totally cool.
Yeah.
Have you camped in your backyard with the kiddos?
Oh, no. Well, we've camped in our friend's backyard.
Ah.
We do it every year on Labor Day.
Uh-huh.
And it's super fun. I've wanted to do it in my backyard, but when your bed's right there, you kind of just decide to just sleep inside.
Yeah, totally. That's right.
But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, look. Oh, sorry. I forgot this. The description of the tent in Leviticus 23 is, and you will take, get this, you will take the fruit of a beautiful tree, the branches of a palm, the branches of a tree, of a leafy tree.
And he says luxuriant tree.
Yeah. The poplars of a tree by a river.
Get a river tree.
Yes. Make sure you get leaves from a beautiful tree by a river.
That's very specific.
And then party before Yahweh for 7 days.
Yeah.
That's like begging to be connected to the tree of life by the river of Eden. Mm. What else is that line doing there?
This festival makes me want to be Torah observant.
Yeah. Yeah. So here we go. I think this is the coolest thing. Mm. We've been asked to make videos
festival
about the feast.
Videos.
I think we should.
Feast
I think
videos.
We should really consider putting it on the list. Mm-hmm. It would be fun to do.
It'd be fun to do. It's easy. Well, now that we've gone through them,
yeah,
and just spent the time to go through them, I feel a lot more like, okay, cool, I got them downloaded. Before it was just this jumbled mess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll forget in another couple weeks. But
what's great is Leviticus 23 has organized it for you in a Genesis 1 type of pattern.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, two sets of three.
Two sets of three.
With the seventh day rest.
Yeah,
Sabbath.
Headed by the seventh day rest. It's the first half of the year. The second half are all in the seventh month. And every one of them is connected to seven in some way.
Yeah.
First day of the seventh month.
And so all of these festivals.
Yes.
You've said this. They're all trying and helping us reconnect with this ideal.
The seventh
of resting
day
resting and reigning with God.
Yes.
In a complete and full and abundant way.
Yeah. Yeah. On all of these, the reason why you set them apart is because they're special days where you bring special offerings. You go to the temple.
Yeah.
And offer your offerings there.
Yeah.
For three of them, Passover, weeks, and tabernacles, once Israel came into the land and had a centralized temple, for those three, all the males were supposed to make pilgrimage every year. Mm. So these were moments where you go meet with God at the symbolic Eden, at the center of the land, or at the center of the camp. Mm. That's what it's all
about.
Did
you experience all of these festivals when you were in Jerusalem for that year?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were there for calendar year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's cool.
It was, yeah, it was really, and often inconvenient.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, like during Unleavened Bread, there was whole sections of observant grocery stores.
Mm.
Anything that had
yeast a certain,
basically gluten or yeast. Mm. Yeah. They would take butcher paper and just wrap whole aisles. You know, like when you're...
like when you're painting or something?
Yeah, like when removing lead paint from a house and they'll wrap it in plastic.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They would do that to whole aisles.
Yeah, they didn't want any yeast to sneak out.
Totally. Yeah.
It's awesome. You
just, yeah. Anyhow.
And as you're doing that, you should be remembering we're hoping for an ideal...
That's right. The whole point is, you inconvenience yourself to symbolically remind you of your real hope, right?
Yeah.
Of your hope that our workaday, grinding it out, isn't all there is. Mm. But God has purpose for all of history to culminate in the hope of the seventh day rest. And we are actually meant to get a little foretaste of it in all of these ritual, symbolic days of rest, which isn't just every 7 days. Now you look at this calendar and you're like, dude,
it's a lot of it.
You're working out this ideal most of the year.
Yeah. Your whole year, you have to plan your whole year around it.
Yeah, totally. Okay, yeah, here's, so this is a later, we can land the plane with this. There's a rabbinic work of a rabbi called Rabbi Eliezer. is from like the 3rd century AD, though he lived a little bit earlier. But he has this famous saying about the Sabbath. He says, "The Holy One, blessed be he, created 7 ages, and of all of them, he chose the 7th age only. The 6 ages are for going in and coming out. They're for war and they're for peace. But the 7th age is entirely Shabbat and rest in eternal life." So here's a rabbi whose thanks, his life was shaped by this. And for him, this is all about celebrating the life of the age to come, right here in the middle of the age of war and peace and going in and coming out.
So he thinks of kind of reality before the 7th age as like, he calls it 6 ages.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very, this is a well-worn motif in Jewish literature of this period, of thinking of the all of creation as taking place in a 7,000-year structure.
All of creation happening in
seven millennia.
7,000-year structure.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and a lot of it spun out of Psalm 90, to you a day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years is like a day.
So when he says ages, he's meaning millennial.
Well, actually, you're right. He doesn't say millennia here.
But that was a common
it's a related, way to think about. It's a related idea.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, but he thinks of 6 ages, 6 large units of time, and the 7th that God has planned is,
yeah.
I like that, entirely Shabbat.
Yeah.
And rest in eternal life. That's what the Sabbath reminds him of every 7 days.
Yeah. That's nice to think about if your days are grueling. I mean, like, if it's just like, man, when is, I hate my job, and it's back-breaking, and it's just like, oh, everlasting rest.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
But after you've been on vacation for like a couple weeks, you're kind of like, I'm ready to do some work.
Yeah, sure.
I'm ready to get something done.
Yes. Yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah.
So for some reason, entirely Sabbath, rest in the life everlasting, sounds a little boring to me.
Well, sure. Isn't it interesting how our social location shapes how we think about things?
Yeah, because
if you're a farmer, you don't take vacations.
No, you don't.
Tabernacles is your vacation.
True. That's true, you don't. I mean,
No, you rest every 7th day.
Man, if I was a farmer.
And you get tabernacles and unleavened bread the 1st and the 7th day, right? Yes. I mean, this is your holiday calendar.
Yeah.
We just read it. It's not that many days off except every 7th.
Yeah, and you're being forced to take those days off. You'd want to make sure the field's still...
Yeah.
Taken care of.
Oh, man. Man, when I lived in Wisconsin, I went to school at UW, and I met a lot of farmers or people who grew up on farms.
Yeah.
Because it's like most of the state
did.
Yeah. And just to hear them talk about, from your earliest memories.
Yeah.
Daily chores in the dark of morning with animals and out in cold, muddy fields. And every day. Never ends.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've met people who are like, my parents never took vacation. What's vacation?
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a different life.
Than everlasting rest. Amazing.
That's right. That's how we got started on this. Yeah, that's right. So in a way, if you have the privilege of taking vacation, it is like a foretaste of the ultimate Sabbath. But a kind of Sabbath where you don't get bored because there's like a whole new universe to cultivate and create within.
Yeah, I mean, it's back to this image of land that instead of being a farmer and just this like grueling day in and day out up before the sun, making sure that it produces for you, it's land that is just producing. It's just happening. And you're going to go out there and you're going to pick from it, and you're gonna cook some food, and you're gonna be doing quote unquote work, and you probably got projects and stuff, but it's just won't feel like that grind of like how do I make this land produce for me and breaking my back doing it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to think. This isn't biblical language, but it's taking the image of in the 7th year you release the land from serving you.
Yeah.
It's imagining a way of existing where you work with the land instead of working the land.
Yeah, it's like this cooperation. It's like almost like this friendship.
It doesn't have to serve you, and you don't have to serve it. Yeah. Remember, like, you return to the dust by the sweat of your brow, you'll live, Genesis 3.
Oh, right. Yeah, what if it's not your slave.
Yeah.
You're not its slave either. Yeah.
And you're not its slave. Yeah, what if, which is on analogy to humans working with each other.
Yeah.
Right? Which is why you release debts and slaves every 7 years. It's the same thing. Your fellow Israelite shouldn't, in the ideal, be your slave, and you shouldn't be his. Mm. You work together and live together. So put that on analogy to the land itself.
Mm.
You work with the land.
Yeah. It's like, hey, land, what are you up to today? What should we do? I got some avocados? Awesome. I'll make some avocado toast. Oh, man. My dream is to have an avocado tree in my backyard.
I love
it. We don't have the habitat or whatever, but like,
we don't have the climate for it.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, we pay for it, but I eat.
Oh, they're so expensive.
Avocados.
They're so expensive.
Like I have an avocado tree.
Yeah.
We consume a lot of avocados.
Yeah.
They're really healthy and satisfying.
Yes.
Yeah. Avocados.
All right.
Avocados are the fruit of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was the fruit of Eden. Who knows?
That's the tree of life. It's probably avocado tree.
Nothing in the Bible about that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bible Project podcast. We're continuing to collect questions for an ongoing question and response that will accompany this series. If you have any questions, send them our way. Record yourself asking the question, keep it to around 20 seconds or so, and let us know your name and where you're from. You can send those questions to info@jointhebibleproject.com. Our theme music is by the band Tense. Today's show was produced by Dan Gummel. We're a nonprofit in Portland, Oregon. We make free resources to experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus. Thanks for being a part of this with us.
All right, cool. Let's see here. Hi, my name is William Murphy. I'm from Orlando, Florida. And let's see, I first heard about the Bible Project in 2017. I loved every video that I've watched so far. I use the Bible Project to help illuminate things that I don't quite understand and just get a reference for the Bible. My favorite thing about the Bible Project is the thing videos. My favorite video so far has been the one on justice. We believe that the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. We're a crowdfunded project by people like me. Free videos, study notes, podcasts, and more. You can find them at thebibleproject.com.